News, news, news.
Stop the presses. If you're driving, pull over the car. If you're in space, just park the space station temporarily. We have big news. We've got two bits of news.
First bit of news, brand new show. Every week on a Monday, we are going to be doing an audience facts special. It's the amazing facts that you guys send in to podcast@qi.com. And that is a slightly shorter than normal episode. It's called Little Fish.
Yeah, we're so excited about this. You guys have been sending in amazing facts for 11 years. We've been using maybe, I'd say, 0.5% of the stuff you guys have been sending in. There is such good stuff in the fishing box. And we're going to be turning it into a brand new show. We're very excited.
But Andy, you said there were two bits of news. What's the second bit?
We have a thing. Some of you will know about it already. It's called Clubfish. It's like our private members club where you can get extra bits of content. You can get ad-free episodes of the show. And we have decided to up the ante there. And we've decided to launch mega new amounts of stuff on Clubfish.
So those of you who are already on Clubfish, don't worry, everything's going to stay the same for you, but there is an opportunity to get more. So there will be full unedited episodes of Fish. There's going to be merch. There's going to be chances to sponsor facts.
Yes, you can get a shout out on the main show. There are going to be video versions of things. It's just, there's so much stuff, we can't even go into it all now. But if you want to check out Clubfish, it's so much fun. Just go to patreon.com/nosuchthingasafish.
Brilliant. Anything else to do?
Let's just do an episode of the show with our good friend Jamie Morton, host of My Dad Wrote a Porno.
Let's do it now.
On with the podcast.
On with the show.
Hello and welcome to another episode of No Such Thing as a Fish, a weekly podcast, this week coming to you live from the London Podcast Festival. My name is Dan Schreiber. I am sitting here with Andrew Hunter-Murray, James Harkin, and Jamie Morton. And once again, we have gathered around the microphones with our four favorite facts from the last 7 days. And in no particular order, here we go. Starting with fact number one, and that is Jamie.
Iconic thespian Beerbohm had a walk-on part in every single production at the Gielgud Theatre in London's West End for 20 years, and fittingly had a front page obituary in the stage newspaper. He was also a cat. I know. What a hag. I'm sorry. That is a thespian cat.
That is.
Yeah.
For people listening on the podcast next week or whenever it goes out, can you describe the cat to us, Jamie?
We've got a tabby cat. He's male. And he's lounging on stage at the Gielgud, looking very happy with himself, beautifully lit. It's black and white. It's almost like a headshot, but it's a full body.
Yeah.
Chaise long kind of look. Is that a foot or a tail?
He's like saying, paint me like one of your French cats.
It's giving that energy, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Same opulence as well around it in terms of the architecture. Yeah, I mean, I love this cat.
So
I'm not going to lie. I've fallen in love with him this week. Never heard of him before, but now I love him.
So when you say walk on role in all the plays,
yeah,
was that official? Like, was he written into?
No.
No. He was.
So he was the resident, is it like Mouser? Is that
the
Mouser name that they caught the mice? And he just would like randomly walk on stage during productions, which, being a theatre director, I find chilling because you work so hard to kind of make a show good, then some fucking cats just like wandering in front of everyone. Yeah.
And what did the actors think of it? Were they?
Well, the actors like loved this cat, like almost uniformly. I think there wasn't a single actor who didn't love Beerbohm because he is, as I said, a total hag. I mean, look at him. But he was loved, and people got very attached to him. So much so that he had this obituary on the front page of the stage newspaper, and people like Penelope Keith wrote obituaries for him. Like, loads of actors kind of got involved.
The stage, I hadn't heard of the stage. Is that like the main thing that you can get
the
on
the Bible?
Him?
Dan, honestly.
Come on, mate.
No, I had actually heard of it. I was just being them for a second. Yeah.
Them. Yeah. They've heard of it too.
Oh, so it is just me.
It's a great newspaper, yeah.
No,
it's
a great newspaper. But it's behind a paywall, but it's great.
Okay, a lot of people did love Beerbohm, but Beerbohm would arrive on stage at moments that weren't necessarily good for a scene, you know. There was one play that was on which was called The House of Bernard Alba, which had a lot of sand all over the stage.
Oh no.
Which to beer bomb was the ultimate pooing ground. It was so that was not good, right?
Well,
those moments.
Not good for who? He loved it.
It adds realism to the play.
Oh yeah.
Depends
yeah.
where it's set. If it's set yeah. in the pitiless desert of the Sahara, it actually I would say kills the mood a bit to have a house cat.
Fair enough. Some people think it's good luck for a cat to be on stage. And in America, at least, there was a superstition that if a black cat came into the theatre, that was really good luck. And if it came on the first night, that was really, really good luck and the whole show was going to be amazing.
Right.
And so the Fifth Avenue Theatre in New York used to keep a black cat backstage. And then on the first show of every run, they would throw it out there. So that it was on stage, and that was good luck. Okay.
And the reason you said mouser a second ago, Jamie, the reason that cats used to be very, very important in theater is because back in the day, food being thrown on stage to show your displeasure or pleasure in a play was a massive thing. So at the end of every night, food was just everywhere, all over the stage, which brought in the mice, and mice were a huge, huge problem. Huh. So theaters would have sometimes up to 20 cats roaming around catching mice if they had problems.
But a lot of those cats will lie on their CVs. You know, you've put down here you also do birds. Is that true? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because actually Beerbohm was on the payroll, I read. He was officially listed on the Gielgud payroll, which as a former accountant, I think brings up a whole host of problems. Like, who pays the national insurance on that?
Yep.
I wonder who his agent was.
I don't know. Someone good. Bloody good.
15% of a cat.
And apparently he would disappear from time to time. According to Dame Hilda Brackett, he would dash off to see a particular friend at the Lyric Theatre.
His girlfriend?
Yeah, she said, "We used to hear lots of meows. This was Soho, after all."
I love it. Do you think all of... Because most West End theatres have cats, as you said.
Yeah.
Do you think they're all mates? Do you think they just like all meet up at like...
Oh, that's a cute... That's
after
a
each show, they're like, "God, you book. Should have seen the performance tonight. Shit."
Well, lots of theatres did have cats, didn't they? So the Noel Coward Theatre had two cats, imaginatively called Girl Cat and Boy Cat. And I think Boy Cat only ever distinguished himself once when he ate Princess Margaret's bouquet.
Mm-hmm. Is that a euphemism?
No, it's not. It's a bloody good one, isn't it?
Yeah, apparently he also escaped off stage during a performance of a musical, Five Guys Named Mo. And he would go under the stage and he would only come out when someone tap danced over him.
Right.
there was a cat called Ambrose at the Theatre Royal Drury Lane, which I think you've performed at.
Oh yeah,
we have. Yeah. And this cat got into a beef with Michael Crawford. He kept upstaging Michael Crawford, and Michael Crawford had no sense of humour about this.
Is Michael Crawford the original
Phantom? Yes.
But was he also Frank Spencer?
Yeah, Frank Spencer. Oh, yeah. That guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
A varied career, I think. We'll agree.
I was going to say, yeah. Like,
So Michael Crawford was like kicking off about this cat, but every single person in the theatre took the cat's side. What does that say?
Wow. Yeah. I read about one that was at the Sadler's Wells. It was called Sadler the Cat, and Sadler in 1956 just suddenly disappeared. But unlike the other cats who would come on unprompted, Sadler actually had a role in a play. So in the Stage magazine, they had an advert to audition for a new cat for the show. And I found the advert. It said, "Owing to the dramatic disappearance of Sadler, official theatre cat at the Wells, the important feline role in the forthcoming production of School of Fathers falls vacant. Auditions will be held. Applicants must be fully grown and capable of maintaining dignity and poise atop a 10-foot-high wall, despite the distractions of a full operatic orchestra and audience laughter and applause. The chosen artiste will receive, for her service, one sardine and two complimentary tickets per performance."
Wow. Amazing. And did you see who got the part?
No.
It was a cat called Keats. And according to the Daily Telegraph, he beat off tough competition from cats called Fantasia, Nimbus, Clot, and Mr. Woodbury Bentley. And they had two auditions. In the second audition, he jumped off the wall that he was sitting on and then walked over to the bar and started knocking down bottles. And they decided this was a perfect cat for the theatre. You know, this is exactly what the old actors would do. So,
lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So good.
How can you cast a cat in a play? They famously don't play Ball. Well, they play with balls, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know.
They're hard to direct, I would imagine.
Yeah, dogs, I think, do get a look in sometimes on the West End. I was trying to find other animals that have been in West End productions.
Oh, yeah.
So there was a Guardian report in 2001 that there was a production of The Taming of the Shrew, which had an entire cast of chickens. And I cannot find out whether it was like a whole flock of chickens and a human cast, or whether it was an entire cast of chickens.
But weren't they all fired, I think?
They were sacked, yes, apparently for being too hysterical. Again, I don't know what the...
hysterical chicken.
I can't imagine how hysterical they got when they were told they were fired. Just big in the room. Guys, we're going to have to let you go. By the way, Beer Bomb, the cat, do you guys know why it's called Beer Bomb?
There was a famous actor called Beer Bomb, but I don't know anything about it.
Yeah, he was a theatre manager. He was an actor as well. His name was Sir Herbert Beer Bomb Tree, and he founded RADA, the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art. Yeah. And he's a pretty amazing character. He released a few records. He did Hamlet's To Be or Not to Be on vinyl. That's pretty cool. Releasing his own stuff.
Really?
And also, randomly, in the play Cats, there is a reference which is said to Gus from Jellyrum. Is that the name of the cat in it? The line is, he's acted with Irving, he's acted with Tree.
Cats, I'm so glad we're on Cats. So thing one, when you think about it, Cats is an anagram of cast.
Okay. And?
Well, it just makes you think, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's also an anagram of act.
Oh, my God.
I was so pleased with myself. Cast. I then got to stack, but without the K? Nah. End the thought there. Oh, that's brilliant.
Is that it?
That was the fact.
That was the fact. He messaged us saying, I've got some amazing stuff on Cats that I need to say on stage.
I spent 6 hours reading about the musical Cats because I knew you had a Cats fact, and that was it.
Well, I just wanted to introduce yours. Yeah, go on.
I have quite a good one about Cats, the musical.
Do you? Okay.
Yeah. For its Broadway run, they used over 49,000 condoms.
Oh, wow. Sorry.
Yeah.
Can we guess why?
Dench.
Sadly, Dench ruptured her Achilles, so couldn't perform in Cats. Oh, although she was originally cast.
She was meant to be.
She was originally cast in Cats.
Yeah,
why do you think they use so many condoms?
To stop things from getting wet is my first thought.
But what sort of thing?
You smuggle drugs for the cast.
No, you're on the right lines, James. Like,
to protect something.
Okay.
A lot of preppers will use condoms to store water, because a condom, like a water balloon, can hold gallons of water.
Yep. Absolutely not.
If you ever go to Dan's for dinner, he offers still sparkling or tasting of spermicide. Sorry, Andy.
Cats have claws, don't they?
Yes.
So it's to protect the claws in transit, and they had 49,000.
Well, real cats have claws. This is a show with people.
Sorry, yeah.
All right, put us out of my...
You were right, James. It was to protect their microphone packs, because they were sweating so much, because it's a dance show, right? So they're dancing so much, they would put their mic packs in condoms.
49,000?
Yeah. So after each show, they would just like tip loads of condoms in the bin outside the pit.
That's
a sweaty show. Well, while we're on Andrew Lloyd Webber, there's another cat connection, which is the fact that Phantom of the Opera now has a sequel. Many, many years ago, Lloyd Webber was working on that sequel, and he was writing it with Frederick Forsyth, the author.
Day of the Jackal, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. So they were writing it. He'd written all the music, and he had it on his electric piano. And then one day he sat down to write a new song, and his kitten, called Otto, stepped on the keyboard and erased the entire score. And so we never got it.
The main thing about Cats, surely, is the movie, the amazing movie that came out a few years ago.
Oh, yeah.
That was really the start of the pandemic, I think.
It was right at the start of the pandemic, wasn't it?
It was a bad
omen. I don't think we're claiming it caused the pandemic.
I don't know.
No, but it made it seem a lot longer.
We knew something bad was in the air when Cats came out.
And the big thing about that is the CGI bum holes that all the cats had.
Well,
Is it true or not? Because that is urban myth. Is it true?
It's urban myth. So someone tweeted, a guy called Jack Waz. And I think, I mean, that sounds like an honest man, doesn't it? Jack Waz.
The thing is, James, you go to such impeccable lengths to source all of your facts. Like, James goes deep into newspaper archives from 200 years ago, but he will also sometimes throw in, like, at Jack Waz as a source.
At Jack Waz is the New York Times of our day. He said that a VFX producer friend of a friend was hired to get rid of the bum holes, right? But then the Daily Beast online magazine found a VFX person and they said it was true. And they were definitely someone who worked on the show. And they said what had happened was actually the way the visual effects worked is they had a very special way of the fur being made. And the fur would go in little like holes, like your hair does. You know, you have walls in your hair. Yeah. And so they had them on all the cats. And it just so happened that if you got them, any of them, from a certain angle, it looked like they had female genitalia or an anus. And they had to employ one person who basically it was their job to go through looking for the bum holes and then getting rid of them.
Right.
That's insane.
That's such a high pressure job as well. You've got to catch every single one, you know?
It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Pokemon. Yeah.
I love it. They could catch all of the bum holes, but not Judi Dench's wedding ring, which is on throughout the fucking film.
Oh, is it?
As like an old cat.
That's a good
So he got all of the rings, but one. And
Exactly. Oh.
This episode of No Such Thing as a Fish is brought to you by Airbnb.
James, summer holidays.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't seen you for so long.
I know, I've been away.
Have you?
I went to all sorts of different places. Went to Herefordshire, went to Somerset, going to Montenegro soon. I just love to get away.
Most interesting thing you saw while you were away?
I saw a street which was an illusion. So from one side of the street, it looked really short, and the other side, it looked really long.
Oh, no way.
If you followed me on social media, you would have seen that.
And what a great site you have on Instagram. Yeah, I absolutely love it.
It was on TikTok.
Okay. Well, I went away as well. Thank you for asking. And stayed in numerous places. But one thing I failed to do was do something that I've done in the past, which was put my house up on Airbnb.
Oh, yeah. How's that go in the past?
So in the past, surprisingly, for someone as incompetent as myself, it does actually work. So it's a great way to earn a little extra money. And it's also flexible. So I can fit around when it works for me and my family. I mean, I've got to say, I must be the best poster boy for Airbnb. If I can make Airbnb work, you can too. I've always loved it. It's always made so much sense.
Absolutely. And while you're away, listener, your home could be an Airbnb too. And it might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.co.uk/host.
Okay, on with the show.
On with the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hey everyone, this week's episode of Fish is sponsored by Babbel.
Babbel. Yes, Babbel is the app that lets you learn a new language, or even better, pick up a language you learned years and years ago and have forgotten. I have done this with Babbel with two different languages and I love it.
Yeah, it's a really amazing app. Here's the thing. According to studies, 70 to 90% of people who are trying to learn a new language give up. They find it too hard. They find it too stressful. So Babbel have basically designed an app to get past that, to make it fun, to make it interesting. They've had over 200 language experts around the world, real humans, actively come together to help build programs, ideas, games. All this stuff is in there, and you've got lots of languages to pick from, and you should do it.
It's really fun. So I've done it with French and German, which are two languages I learned ages ago, and then forgot because I stopped doing them at school. And it is really easy. It's bite-sized. So I was trying to do it every day.
Okay.
And I ended up doing a French lesson every day for months and months. And it was just so satisfying.
Oh, give me some French. Let's hear it.
Stop that. But it's really satisfying because I went on holiday recently, admittedly to Portugal, but I turned out, went to a place where almost everyone was speaking French. And I was able to just engage, tune into conversations around me, eavesdrop on my neighbors at dinner. And it was so satisfying to do. It's just, yeah. And Babbel does make it very easy.
They are incredible. Yeah. And despite Andy's French you heard just now, it actually works. So if you would like to try it out, head over to Babbel.com, that's Babbel.com/fish, and for a special limited time only, you're going to get 60% off your Babbel subscription.
60%? 60%? That's 60%. Yes, go to Babbel.com/fish, get 60% off your subscription. It's so much fun. They make language learning easy and enjoyable. Do it now.
Okay, on with the show.
On with the podcast.
So it's time for fact number two, and that is my fact. My fact this week is that at one of the oldest bathhouses in Japan, visitors have the option of soaking in hot water, cold water, electric water,
or condom water.
We need to call them and suggest that. No, the final one, there are many others, but the other one is radioactive water.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Yeah. People also drink this water. So it turns out, I thought this was going to be unique to this one place in Japan, which is radium onsen. And onsen is a word that means bathhouses in Japan that use hot spring water and they take natural source water and they use that. There's something like 25,000 hot spring sources in Japan that are used.
They're everywhere.
Yeah, and 3,000 onsen establishments all over Japan. So it's a real big thing there. And so like the electric water that you would sit in, that actually sends mild electric currents through the water as you're sitting in it. And people describe it as like being tickled by lightning as you're trying to relax. So you just
how relaxing, yeah. What?
Yeah. Well, they see these baths not as necessarily completely relaxing. It's all about rejuvenation. It's all about health and so on. And so radioactive water, radium water, is a thing.
But it's not bad for you, is it? Is it like the quantities are really, really small?
The quantities are less than you would get if you were on a flight, for example. But that's
a flight.
You know, if we get hit by radioactive, you know, flares from space as you're on a flight. So, James, quick, jump in.
What? What?
There is radiation that comes from space, and if the closer you are to it, the less.
Space? Space. It's a flight. I'm not Katy Perry.
But it means. There's less of the atmosphere to block it out, but when you're further up, it's the basics.
But if you're if you're on a plane all the time, it'd be bad for you. But
an air hostess or a pilot, for example.
Yeah.
And it's bad for you.
They do get a bit more.
What the hell are you talking about? They said that like it's the safest way to travel. No?
But if you live in Cornwall, there's radiation there too.
God. Is there?
Yeah. But here's some good news.
Should get a lead box at the end of this.
So there is radiation in Cornwall. Like Cornwall has more background radiation than anywhere else, but we all have a little bit. And a normal person would get 2 to 3 millisieverts of radiation in a year. But there's a place called Ramsar in Iran that has the highest radiation anywhere in the world. It's because they have hot springs and radiation underground and it comes up. And they get 260 millisieverts per year, which is more than 100 times what a normal person would get. But actually, the cancer incidence there is lower than any of their neighbors.
Right.
And what people think is the people who live there, they have a higher proportion of what's called T cells. Remember in COVID, they said T cells, it's like helps your immune system. Yeah. Well, it turns out that people there have got a higher proportion of T cells, and it's a thing called hormesis, which is the idea that very small, low doses of something that would be otherwise be harmful can actually make you stronger.
No.
And it is really, I mean, I'm not saying everyone should go out now and get as much radiation as possible, but it is genuine science.
You'll have a great time.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That really is amazing.
It's very cool. So as I was saying a second ago, these are massive in Japan. And I was trying to find more information about this very specific one in Osaka. And the best place I could find out about it was a website called tattoofriendlyonsen.com. And this is so interesting because in Japan, when you go to an onsen, largely it's separated. So men will go into one place, women will go to
another.
You
have to be naked.
You've got to be completely naked. And the problem is in Japan, if you have tattoos, you're not allowed to go and show your tattoos in these places because of the Yakuza. So a lot of foreigners arrive
and
trying to go.
And the Yakuza are the gangsters.
Yeah, the mafia, basically.
Who are tattooed, typically.
Yeah, exactly. And so if you arrive and you've got like, you know, like eternity, I love cherry, you know, whatever on your face.
I love.
It's so revealing knowing what you would have gone for, Dan.
I didn't want to talk about my actual tattoos. Okay, I will. So thug life across your tummy. They won't let you in because of the Yakuza thing. So this website basically lists all of the onsens that you can go to and that will allow you in.
Do you think the pork broth onsen would be one of those tattoo-friendly ones?
I think it might be. Yeah, this is amazing.
There's a place. It's the pork broth hot tub. It's the Unisen Spa, and they have a massive ramen bath, basically, and it's just slightly porky hot water.
It sounds amazing. Is the noodles in there?
Well, they dangle above you a huge sculpture that looks like a pair of chopsticks holding noodles. So it looks like you're about to be.
It's like you're a soft boiled egg.
It's like you're a. It's like you. And if you've seen my physique, that I am like a soft boiled egg, basically. But they've got a green tea bath. They've got a sake bath, which is like very slightly sake. It's not obviously not all sake because that'd be hugely expensive. They've got a coffee bath, which does not look appetizing.
Yeah.
It looks really gross.
It's enema. It's safe if you have the runs, isn't it?
Oh yes. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah,
anyway. That sounds amazing. I'd love to go there.
It does sound cool.
That sounds awesome. I have been to an onsen, a few in fact, in Japan.
Really?
There's a thing in Japan called Hadaka no Tsukiai, which means naked camaraderie. And the idea is everyone gets naked, you're all together in a big sort of jacuzzi with no bubbles, and it means you're all emotionally together, open, honest. That's the idea behind it. Wow. And I must admit, I went in, ran in, had a bath, came out, and went back to my room as quickly as I could.
Oh, right. You didn't have any...
Not very communal for you then.
I don't speak Japanese.
But there are other ways of communicating then.
Yeah, but naked charades at the best of times is difficult.
Just to hark us back to the last fact, do you know that Andrew Lloyd Webber has a 30-person hot tub?
That's disgusting.
Does he?
So is a 30-person hot tub meaning everyone gets a slot on the outer wall?
What's the alternative? Like that it could school bus format where it's like 6x4. Like what's the
yeah? What? There's an aisle down the middle.
Tickets, please.
Chicken and fish. Nuts. No, we don't have any. I just can see yours. I think
it must be that everyone gets a bit of wall. Otherwise, you're just bobbing about in the middle, feeling like a lemon. Yeah.
Oh, I hate that bit. Yeah.
Bobbing.
There
is a spa in the southern island of Japan, Kyushu, and it opened up, I think, in 2017. They'd announced it with big fanfare the year before. They said, this is going to be it wasn't a spa, it was a spa-themed amusement park. And they had they released some images of basically a roller coaster that's full of bath roller coaster.
Okay.
Well, you're in a little bath, and that's your
You know, you get in the carriage, and it's a bath.
Wow.
And you're in a spa. You're
that
in an
sounds
onsen.
Fun.
They were not sure at the time if it could be done, if it was like beyond the ken of humanity. But they did it.
So you're in a compartment that is a jacuzzi, basically.
I think they didn't quite crack the full roller coaster bath. Because that would have been very heavy, obviously.
And it would spill a lot. Surely.
It would spill a lot.
It's like an opposite log flume. The water's in.
If you're really unlucky, you'll be dry at the end of it.
Yeah. All the people waiting on the side go, yeah, that's very interesting. There's another one, which I wonder if that's there as well, where you have an option of arriving and they bury you up to your neck in sand, and it's quite hot sand, so that you can get whatever, you know, holistic therapies. So have you ever done any sort of odd pampering things like this?
That you're willing to admit to?
Yeah.
I was quite intrigued by the beer baths that you can do. You know, in Europe, in like the Czech Republic, there's a lot, they're quite popular now. You just like bathe in like hoppy water, a bit like your ramen.
Right.
I wonder if you'd be interested in this. This is a thing in Japan. It's the Nightingale Feces Facial. Now, it's not what it sounds like. It's feces from the Japanese bush warbler, which is not a true nightingale.
Oh. Thank God.
In Japanese, it's brilliantly called Uguisu no fun.
Right.
And apparently,
for anyone around you, you stink of shit. Yeah.
Apparently, Victoria Beckham is a proponent of it.
Oh, really?
Wow.
Okay.
That's extreme.
I read about the crying therapy rooms, which seems really nice. The whole idea is to make you as sad as you could possibly be. So you go in and you sit down and there's just sad movies playing on the screen and someone sits next to you just going, oh, it's really sad, isn't it? And then they hand you tissues as you're crying. Just me. Okay.
Yeah, that one
sounds
what else
great. Have I got?
No, that sounds nice. Sort of have a good cry.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd buy that.
Just going back to onsen, so these baths, would you eat an onsen tamago, which is a traditional Japanese egg, which is cooked in a onsen? No. You put your egg in a rope net, you put it in the onsen, and the water's about 70 degrees, and you leave it in for 30 to 40 minutes, and then it's done.
Question?
Yeah.
Because there are two ways of cooking eggs in water. Shell on and shell off. So are we poaching this bad boy?
I believe it's shell on, I think.
Oh, then fine.
Shellard.
Wow.
There you go.
The audience has spoken.
But people in it.
It can be in a bath. It's not just a water bath like a bain-marie. It's an actual onsen.
Yeah.
And also the eggs have a unique silky custard texture.
So I bet they do.
Yeah.
I would absolutely eat that. I'm sorry, can I just ask the person, was it a lady in the audience who said Shellard? Have you had one of these?
They're really good.
There you go.
Can't you, like, a poached egg, there's that, like, bit of white that never gets cooked, and it's almost, like, phlegmed on your plate.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Looks like a Dementor in the water as it's boiling.
And I've, like, never seen a poached egg that hasn't got it. And I'm like, why do people order this? It's foul.
Oh, I love a poached egg.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But they're just, like, if it's in its wrapper, I don't mind where it's been.
Okay.
Like, I'd have a... If there was a banana in at the same time, pop that in the net. I don't mind.
Yeah. Because it's been up a chicken's bum, hasn't it? Really?
You're right. Let's not get fussy, you know.
I wish I hadn't brought it up, I'll be honest.
That's good.
But just one other weird spa thing. There was that bull semen hair treatment, right?
Okay.
Did you read about this in Chelsea? No?
In Chelsea?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a hair mask, basically, in like 2008, 2009.
A hair mask?
Yeah. It was this place called Harry's Salon in Chelsea, and it offered a 45-minute Aberdeen organic hair treatment, which was Aberdeen Angus, like good quality, bull cum
stuff,
which women would like, and men, I guess, would pay like a lot of money to have like lathered over their hair,
yep,
and would just like sit with it for 45 minutes, and apparently it was amazing.
Really?
And it made the hair silky and smooth. And
but I have Head and Shoulders 2-in-1 shampoo and conditioner, and that makes my hair silky and smooth.
Andy.
Are there levels of silkiness and smoothness that I've not matched yet?
You haven't lived.
I can imagine one of these women from Chelsea going into the countryside afterwards and walking through a field, and all the female cows are like, do you smell something?
Yeah. Well, it's funny you say that, because the people that ran this salon told the Metro newspaper.
Sorry, these pervert fraudsters. Yes, go on.
Yeah, these quacks said to the Metro that the semen is refrigerated before use and doesn't smell. I mean, it is cum, but it's not, you know.
It's not going to stay refrigerated. That's the problem. The body heat is going to cause that to warm up. And
yeah, but it's 45 minutes in it. Like, yeah. You were going to like eat an egg from a pond of people. Like, what do you mean? Like, yeah. Don't get all.
We do need to move on to our next fact. Should
oh,
we do?
No.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
well, radium. We didn't even
so
touch.
So much radium. I've got just reams of engineering stuff about how the Fukushima reactor dealt with its water after the terrible incident there. But I'll save it.
It's
fascinating. They built an underground wall of
ice.
Oh,
he's going for it. Fuck's sake.
Okay,
we do need to move on. So it is time for fact number 3, and that is... Oh, it's Andy.
So, after the terrible incident at Fukushima, the engineers there pulled off a miracle of preventing the radioactive. So they've got, imagine a 1.5-kilometer radius circle,
oh,
30 meters underground, filled with frozen brine. Get off your phone, come on. Off your phone!
Alcaraz is about to start against Djokovic. 2 seconds.
Okay.
Anyway. Right. Sorry. My fact is, the first named man who sent a letter bomb only invented it to get back at people who had rejected all his other ideas for inventions. So, this is...
Very funny.
I
love this guy.
He's a very interesting historical figure. His name was Martin Eckenberg, and I was on the website of the Clapham Society, which is a great website all about Clapham, which is a part of South London where I used to live. And he was a Swedish scientist, Martin Eckenberg, born in 1870. He was he was a gifted inventor in some ways. His ideas were decent, but the other problem that he had personally was that he was a liar, he was a cheat, he claimed qualifications he didn't have. He'd been kicked out of Sweden's Royal Institute of Technology specifically for cheating.
He was a bad un.
Fucking legend.
So
free thinker.
A free thinker.
Outside the box kind of guy.
But still, this didn't hold him back that much because he moved to one of the nicest houses in Clapham. It was this really beautiful mansion he moved to. That's not the point of the fact. it's been replaced by flats now, so you can't go and visit it. But if you would, that's weird and you should be on a terror list. And then in 1905, he thought, right, I'm going to get revenge on everyone who's turned down my ideas along the way, who turned me down for finance. I am going to get back at you. And so he basically started making his own letter bombs. And like there were packages sent through the post to harm people before, but yeah. I think he's the first named sort of, you know, like
prosecuted. I think it was a bit unfair. So like the first person that he really sent it to was a guy called Lundin. Who ran this company. It was like an engineering company. And Eckenberg had invented something that could turn fish oil into engine oil. And he thought it was going to make his millions, but it failed. And so he thought, well, I'm going to get this guy Lundin. But the reason it failed is because the oil still smelled of fish. So like if people put it in the cars smelled of fish.
Right. Yeah. Should have spoken to the people at Harry's and get that scent removed, like the bull semen.
But no, and ships, it was going to be used on ships, yeah, which have fish, obviously.
That's true.
Hence the phrase, fish and ships.
And then this guy, Lundin, opens the packet, and it said, I read an article in the newspaper that said, it rumbled and shook like thunder. The director felt as if he had been hit by lightning, or tickled by lightning. An intense flame burst out of the box and burned his hands, arms, chest, and face terribly, and his clothes went on fire. And the next day, he got a postcard saying, a former employee has decided that you're ripe for the picking.
Yeah. Yes. What's interesting is that it's not as if he sent it from the post in the UK, which would be more traceable. He went by boat back to Sweden. He assembled it there, sent it there, and then went back home. So he really covered up his tracks.
But then he still sent a postcard with his writing identifiable on it to the person he just...
Yeah.
I mean, he was caught for various quite stupid things like that.
Yeah. Actually, can I just rescind that I thought he was good?
No, no.
Here's another thing as well, Jamie, to see if you still think he's good. So when he was arrested, he claimed innocence. And then he, according to the New York Times, he lost his reason and was taken to an asylum. He died 2 months later after his arrest of what they said was apoplexy. But the head of the Swedish detective service said that if he'd been sent back to Sweden, he would have also been tried for murdering his two wives.
Oh.
Right. Yeah.
How you feeling? So,
sorry about that.
Let's get a live reaction from Jamie Morden sitting right here.
Sounds fine.
Yeah. not too shabby.
So apparently what appears to have happened is he poisoned his first two wives and then he bribed the prison guards to get him the same poison, which he then took himself.
Yeah.
Unique thinker.
And interestingly, today, if you go to the police museum in Stockholm, there's a giant waxwork, like a replica, human-sized wax replica of him standing there. And not only that, they have a bunch of things that were to do with the case. So one of the bombings, which was sent to the Swedish Export Society, was opened up by a man called John Hammer. And John Hammer's thumb was blown off as part of opening this thing. Yeah. And if you go to the police museum in Stockholm, you can see the wax work of Martin Eckenberg. And then you can see the actual thumb of John Hammer.
Wow. Thumbs up or thumbs down? Is the
Yeah, he wasn't happy. It's a definite thumbs down from Hammer. Yeah.
So he's a very, very grim guy. But he was an innovator of sorts. And as I say, people had been sending devices designed to hurt other people through the post for ages, you know. So the very first one was a thing called the bandbox plot. People were very worried about the Whig Party in the, I think, 18th century. And supposedly that party were involved in some attempts to assassinate people. Get this, the very first ever thing sent through the post designed to harm someone, this bandbox plot, was a box full of, I think it was three pistols. That when you open it, they all go off at you.
Wow.
I know. Yeah. And it was,
oh my God.
This is the story that it was thwarted by Jonathan Swift.
What, really?
The author? Of Gulliver's Travels.
Yeah.
Because he was a political figure as well, and he supposedly noticed a thread on the box and cut it before opening it.
So he's the first red wire, blue wire cut moment that we've ever had for a bomb.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. And we talk about his books instead. Yeah.
But Eckenberg was the first of a kind of new wave where gunpowder had been invented, the post had improved, things like that. And so there were anarchists. People were very, very worried about anarchists with their kind of cartoon style bombs that they'd be throwing. So, yeah.
Yeah. And he also invented a way to freeze dry milk, which is kind of similar to what we have today. So like, you know, instant custard, we wouldn't have it without him.
Really?
Well, Eckenberg?
Oh. Yeah.
Wow. Jamie, you want to change your... Because you've gone off him, but I know you don't mind custard, you know.
I love a bit of custard. I mean, I'm kind of 50-50. I think the guy's pretty cool. Now, I'll tell you why I think he's not a complete villain.
Yeah.
So interesting. It's so interesting which hills people choose to die on. I find that really fascinating.
I just kind of love the fact that, like, through revenge, he invented something that was actually, I mean, not a good thing, but was like a thing.
The silver lining is slimming down all the time, I gotta say. So it was for revenge, but he did invent something really bad. But
well, maybe this is how my mind worked. Because I mean, I got quite heavily into revenge during my researching of this. So I was like, what else has revenge kind of created? And the rotary telephone is one thing that revenge has created. Yeah, because there was a guy called Alman Strowger, and he was an undertaker in the late 19th century in Kansas City. They were all manual switchboards at that point, obviously. And he thought that the switchboard operators were deliberately fiddling with his connections because...
So you would call up and say, patch me through to this person. Right.
And he was convinced that this was being meddled with because the other undertakers across the town, I think their wife worked at the phone company.
If someone dies, you put them through to to the rival.
And yeah, exactly. So they were getting all the work. He was like, this fucking, you know, what's going on here? And so he invented the rotary telephone to cut out these.
The one where you dial. With
yeah, the, so you the could ring. Dial yeah, it yeah. yourself.
That is amazing.
That's Isn't that great. Amazing?
Yeah. Right.
Revenge, but not all bad.
Okay.
It's like those spite houses, you know, spite houses. And that's like, it's just so cool that like something that you build to like screw someone over ends up being worth more than the house that
Yeah, exactly.
I just love stuff like that.
Just jumping back to letter bombs for a second, I've discovered that the former prime minister, well, a very long former prime minister, Anthony Eden, prime minister of England, he was almost killed by a letter bomb. Yeah, and this was prior to him being prime minister. It was when he was foreign secretary, and someone had hand-delivered a letter bomb. Mm-hmm. He took it, but he thought, this looks a bit boring. So he put it in his briefcase, and he had it for 24 hours. He went home, he didn't open it. He just had a whole day of not opening it. And then Scotland...
But a letter looked boring.
Yeah, he thought it looked like a circular. Like, it looked like something that might have been dropped off. It was a generic thing.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, and so then Scotland Yard got in contact and said, we're worried that something might have been sent to you that is a bomb. And he still didn't look at it. And it was his secretary who eventually went, that might be a bomb. And then it was. And so it was just purely his absolute boredom towards this letter that...
The most interesting letter he ever received, actually.
Well, that's the thing is, like, they're designed to go off when you open them, aren't they? So you can carry them around.
Yeah.
And it's fine. So, like, for instance, you're told that if you work in, like, a government office and they might happen, a lot of people, when they get a letter that they're not sure about, they put it in water because they think that's what you're supposed to do with a bomb, but you're absolutely not supposed to put it in water because some of the explosives will explode if you put them in a big...
Is that so?
Yeah.
Also renders the letter completely illegible.
Exactly.
Like, what a stupid idea.
There are some tips. There are some useful tips, actually. So warning signs include excess postage. Like, why is someone spending so much money on their parcel?
Because you don't want to risk it getting returned to you, do you?
Right. No return address. The really clever bombers will leave the return address off.
I think I would put the return address as my number two nemesis.
Yeah, nice.
Such a good idea.
Yeah.
Such a good idea.
Number two. How many you got?
It's a long old list, Jamie.
Bad spelling.
Oh.
Because a lot of people sending these things are not the... Maybe... I'm going to slag off letter bombers. They're not the brightest buttons.
Really?
Yeah, bad spelling.
Because they've just constructed a bomb. It feels like you've got a basic intelligence.
Prepare to get one. What are you doing?
They might have studied the sciences and not the humanities.
Yes, that's the point. There are so many kinds of intelligence. addressed personal, confidential, or do not x-ray.
Spelt wrong.
And the final one, just for any of that have slipped through those many holes in the Swiss cheese, ticking sounds. protruding wires. Okay, yep. Or aluminium foil.
Or if it says Acme Bomb on the front.
If it's dropped off by a coyote who looks pleased with himself, that's another one.
I did read there was a, what's the name of the journalist? Slavoj Žižek. Yeah, so he wrote this piece, and the opening anecdote of the piece said, the top winner in the contest for the greatest blunder of 1998 was a Latin American patriotic terrorist who sent a letter bomb to a U.S. consulate in order to protest against America interfering local politics. As a conscientious citizen, he wrote his return address on the envelope. However, he did not put enough stamps on it, so that post was returned to him. Forgetting he'd put it in, he opened it and blew himself up.
No. He literally did what James said.
No. Yeah. Now, who knows if that's apocryphal, or but it's what, Jesus.
Are the fingerprints of Jack Waz anywhere near this?
I tell you what, that's the first time Jack Waz and Slavoj Žižek have been mentioned in the same sentence together.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hello, everybody. Just wanted to let you know we are sponsored this week by Calm.
Ah, Calm. This is an incredible app. It's the number one app for sleep and meditation. It's basically designed to bring down your stress levels and make you get good sleep and just a better life.
That's right. It is very, very easy to feel anxious, feel stressed. And Calm has a lot of methods. They have things like guided meditations to help you work through those anxieties and stresses of everyday life, to boost your focus, to build healthier habits. You will end up being a calmer, 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 calmer chameleon at the end of it.
I don't know why that joke stressed me out, but it did. But Andy's right. You can become calm simply by using this app. People really swear by this thing. I have so many people in my life who use it. So if you go to calm.com, that's calm.com/fish, you'll get 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library.
That is right. As Dan says, calm.com/fish. Maybe if you work in the emergency services, you'll end up as part of the calmer police.
These are great jokes, should be said.
it's really highly recommended. They've got 2 million five-star reviews, and if you go to calm.com/fish, you can find out why.
Okay, come on, let's get back to the podcast. On with the show.
Lovely.
On with the podcast.
It is time for our final fact of the show, and that is James.
Okay, my fact this week is that there is currently a scandal in Thailand after at least a dozen supposedly celibate monks admitted to having sex with a woman called Mrs. Golf.
James, you're a keen golfer.
That's how I found this. I was Googling golf.
No.
I just read this in the news and I thought it's very amusing. It is a lot of senior monks. I mean, not amusing if you're a monk, because obviously a lot of them have lost their livelihoods, including some as high ranking as Fra Thep, which means angelic level. So this goes to the very, very top. And it turns out they've been having relationships with this woman who's called Mrs. Golf, and they've been transferring money to her. And they found this lady, and they found over 80,000 photos of naked monks on her phone.
How do they know they're monks? Sorry to quibble.
I reckon there's a way.
You reckon there's a way? Yeah, it's probably a way, isn't
it? I reckon there's a way. Wow. Probably it's the hairstyle down there. It's like it's a like a tonsure.
80,000's a lot.
Not necessarily all different monks. They could have been 80,000. Well,
still, I don't even know if I have that amount of storage on my phone for 80,000.
Yes, what was
photos.
Her data plan like? This is really interesting.
Is she in the cloud? She's using the cloud.
Yeah. The reason she's called Mrs. Golf is because this is quite common in Thailand for people to have little short nicknames. And you're kind of given them as a child by your parents, and they don't really mean anything. Like, it might be that this person's parents love golf, but more likely they just take like a Western word that kind of sounds fun or trendy or whatever, and they just called that. The most famous Thai person in the world probably is Lisa from Blackpink, and her nickname is Pok Pak. So they're just mostly just sounds, or they might be little words from other languages, but it's just like a little nickname. But people go by it in real life. Like, as adults, you might still be known as that nickname.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But this is an unbelievably fascinating story. This one woman went around so many of these different monasteries and managed to talk in what were effectively, I'm assuming, celibate monks into engaging not only in sex, but also having photos taken. And the top monks, some of them have fled the country. We don't know quite where they are, and they haven't said why they've done that. They're now investigating 300,000 other Buddhist monks in Thailand off the back of this to see whether or not they're involved. And she got a lot of money off the back of this.
Was her aim extortion? Sort of, yeah, I'll yes. release the photos.
So the photos would be shown back to them and then they would have to pay money. And a lot of the monks have been acquitted where the police have decided that actually you just gave her money because she was pleading for the money and didn't engage in sexual activity.
Interesting. But do you know how much money, allegedly, she has netted? The equivalent of $11.9 million from this.
There's a lot of money in monking, isn't there?
Isn't there?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a bigger career than I thought.
Yeah.
Like, no, my careers advisor did not say, have you considered becoming a monk?
And I think it's like quite a big deal in Thailand because if you're a Buddhist, you think that if someone becomes a monk, then they kind of automatically sort of develop this strong resistance to temptation and that kind of thing. And so to find out that they haven't was quite a big deal for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I think this is very interesting because I started reading about, by the way, James, there's a very hard fact to Google, like naughty monks and and naughty nuns is actually even worse. It's an even harder, legit Google. But basically, there was a lot of this in the 16th century in England because monks and nuns and monasteries and nunneries were seen as hotbeds of sin. And the idea was they're all on the take. They're all selling pardoning for sins, that kind of thing. Like they're all, and they're all shacking up. And there were some institutions.
Hence the Reformation.
The Reformation, right. But I think we've all been conned into thinking that monks and nuns are inherently sort of naughty figures because they're absolutely not. And I think we've fallen for Henry VIII era propaganda. And I'm blowing the lid off this. Not enough people talk about it, but I'm not afraid to. I'd just like to reference the paper by Christian Knudsen, Sodomitic Monks and Other Dissolution Myths, The Late Medieval Monastic Decline Narrative Revisited. And it is a belting read. It's really good. And it's...
Can you tell us more about the Fukushima disaster?
But Henry VIII wanted to dissolve the monasteries and he did because they owned a huge proportion of English land, right? They were so wealthy. And Henry VIII thought, I'm going to discredit ecclesiastical institutions any way I can. And every monastery in England in 1535 and 6 got a visit from bureaucrats who were trying to record every dubious incidence of behavior by a monk or a nun they could. And there were some cases, absolutely, there were some cases where monks had been playing the field or whatever it is. But they also, they had to come up with new crimes. So they found dozens of instances recorded of voluntary pollution, which is just sort of playing with yourself. But it's not. In one priory, Westacre, 76% of the monks were labelled incontinent, by which they mean romantically incontinent.
Right.
But 10 of those 13 were for just enjoying some sort of cowl billiards. And so it's not... sorry, not cowl. The cowl goes on your head, doesn't it? You know what I mean?
Hardly ever.
I just think it's really interesting and I think we shouldn't fall for it.
Okay we won't. But also, I'm a Catholic. I mean, you know, lapsed Catholic. But, you can do anything if you say sorry. That's, the point.
Yeah.
So, but actually, what's the big deal?
The penance was quite severe, or it could be. So Richard Gray, one man called Richard Gray in medieval England, he was found guilty of having sex with a nun, and he was sentenced to being flogged while walking around Stamford Church on 4 Sundays in a row, carrying a candle while dressed only in linen garments. And then he had to make a barefoot pilgrimage to Lincoln Cathedral.
From where?
Wherever he lived.
Well, that's a movable feast of a punishment, isn't it? What if he thought, right, I'm going to get a flat just outside Lincoln?
Yeah, that was quite a miss for me to not say where he actually lived in my notes.
No, that's,
but then he after that, he didn't do what he was supposed to do, and they excommunicated him. But in those days, being excommunicated was a big old deal.
Right.
Because it means you can't go to heaven, but it also means you can't be baptized, it means you can't get married, you can't do all sorts of different things.
Yeah.
Yeah, and actually, quite often, the women were punished more than the men. So two that happened quite close to each other, a guy called Nicholas Plymouth was a monk who was committed adultery with a tanner's wife, and he was ordered to remain silent for 1 week. And at this, around the same time, someone called Alice Longspray was sentenced to a year of strict confinement after an affair with a priest.
That is double standards.
So it is double standards, yeah.
James, you've spent time in Bhutan.
I have.
Did you ever hear of the Thunderbolt of Flaming Wisdom while you were out there?
That's what they still call me that now. I wonder when the Thunderbolt of Flaming Wisdom is going to return.
So it's referring to a monk's penis, but... So I question who your real friends were out there, but...
It was strange that they yelled at me in the street. Is that right?
There was this guy, Drukpa Kunli, and he was in the 1400s. And
yeah, I've been to his church.
You've been to his church? Yeah, yeah. So he was interesting because he was known as the saint of 5,000 women. He was a fertility saint. The idea was he thought sex should be incorporated into reaching enlightenment. And so,
oh, right.
Yeah, so yeah.
Classic. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you would meet the Thunderbolt of Flaming Wisdom as part of your hello to him, basically. But he was liked, but mad as fuck. Like, people genuinely thought he was. And
he was known as, like, the holy madman or something like
yeah.
that, right?
And he introduced this idea, which still goes on in various bits of Bhutan today, which is that if you're setting up a new house and you need it to be blessed, you would basically graffiti phallus,
yeah,
put dick pics all over, like draw a penis all over the walls. Did you see any while you were
there? Oh, yeah, yeah. They're on every house has them.
Yeah.
In this particular town where he was from. And also, if you go into his church, a priest comes up to you with a giant phallus and sort of touches you as if you're being knighted by the queen.
Wow.
Right. Did you have that?
Yeah.
Wow.
Cool. Yeah.
Arise.
If it's on every house, can you put it on a semi? Sorry. Go on. Do you want to know something cool about the first century Saint Thecla?
Yes, please.
Yes, this
please.
Was sent in by a listener, actually. Listener Kat Brinker. So thanks, Kat, for this. This is the first century Saint Thecla. She is the unofficial patron saint of computers and the internet. Okay. Can you work out why?
It's going to be sex connected, presumably.
Nope.
but you said it was to do with the internet.
No, I know. What could a first century monk have to do with computers and the internet?
She liked cats.
That's a really good one. That's very close.
She was very racist all the time.
No. It's because her name, Thecla, sounds like the Spanish word for a key on a keyboard. Thecla.
Okay. Oh.
Thecla.
You've not just wasted their time.
Unbelievable. Would you like to know some anagrams of the word Thecla? I've got loads.
That is it. That is all of our facts. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for everyone who has joined us around the world on the live stream. We are all found on our online accounts. You can get us on Instagram. I'm there. I'm on @Schreiberland. James?
I'm on TikTok. No such thing as James Harkin.
Andy?
Instagram @MrsGolf.
80,000 photos on his grid. It's insane. It's too much, mate. It's too much. And Jamie?
Uncle Igor, it's weird. Don't worry.
Okay. Yeah. And if you want to send us any of your facts, you can do that as well by going to podcast@qi.com. So send us facts, send us anything that you heard in this episode that you want to talk about. We take it all and we bring it to our special secret room, which is part of Clubfish. We got any Clubfish members here? Six, okay. Everybody. But we will read them out there as part of our mailbag special, so do that. Go online, find out if we're coming to a town near you with more live shows. But otherwise, come back here next week for more of our actual show. It's all free. Come and do that. Thank you so much, everyone, for being here tonight. London Podcast Festival, that was awesome. We will see you again. Goodbye.